Garofalo against the Village of Hazelcrest.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, my name is Patricia Brummer. I represent the appellant, Michael Garofalo. With me on this joint appeal is Attorney Nicola Tancredi, who is counsel for joint appellant Mark Pierce. And he will be addressing the court a little bit later. May it please the court. In deciding the multiple motions for summary judgment in this case, the trial court pointed out on defendant's motion for summary judgment, it must be taken as true that Malcolm White's race was a factor in selecting him as deputy chief. On the joint motion filed by plaintiff Patrick Murray and plaintiff Michael Garofalo and the motion filed by Mark Pierce, the trial court held it is still taken as true that Jones testified White's race was a consideration but not the reason for his hiring. Once the court found that White's race was a consideration in his promotion, there was direct evidence of discrimination.
Counsel, let me ask you just a preliminary question. We saw the number of senior officers. What's the total number of officers in the force?
I'm sorry?
Total number of police officers, sworn officers.
Your Honor, that number's not in the record. Are you talking about the...
how many patrol officers, for example?
That number is not in the record, Your Honor, and it varied.
We know there's two captains and five sergeants and one chief.
Well, actually, there was a chief, two deputy chiefs, sergeants, and patrol officers.
No.
So it was a relatively collapsed hierarchy. I believe prior to, and this may be what the court is thinking about, prior to 2003, the two second-in-command positions were lieutenants. And then that was changed by an ordinance so that they became deputy chiefs.
Now, this is Illinois' home rule versus non-home rule situation with regard to Hazelcrest?
Yes, Your Honor.
How does that work with regard to how the police department operates?
You mean with respect to promotions, Your Honor?
And home rule and or non-home rule.
Well, the deputy chief or the chief of police had the discretion to select whom the deputy chiefs and prior to that the lieutenants. Sergeants were determined by means of a competitive exam, and the patrol officers were simply hired if they met the qualifications.
I assume, for example, Chicago would be home rule.
Yes, Your Honor.
And then smaller communities, non-home rule, based on statute rather than internal city ordinances.
That's correct. Hazelcrest was a home rule community. Okay.
What was a home rule or not?
Yes, it was.
Was it?
Okay. Once the court found that White's race was a consideration in his promotion, there was direct evidence of discrimination. In fact, the trial court specifically held that there was direct evidence that race motivated the decision to select White. There was other direct evidence of race discrimination in the record as well. Jones testified, for example, that he was proud of the fact that where the former chief only talked about getting minority representation, he, quote, made it happen, unquote. The village had an EEO policy that called for recruiting and promoting minorities to reflect the racial makeup of the village as a whole, and Jones admitted that he relied on that EEO policy.
I gather that the racial makeup of the community had changed over time.
Well, actually, it changed. It flip-flopped in just a few years. It went, Hazelcrest went from being approximately 80%, and these are approximations, 80% white, 20% African-American and other, to being 80% African-American and approximately 20% white. And that was in the...
What, like within 10 years or so?
Less than that, Your Honor. That the evidence in the record indicates that. Also, direct evidence included the fact that when Jones promoted White to deputy chief, Mayor Donaldson, who had just been elected, stated publicly, when we took over, I mentioned to the chief that we had to have diversity. Now we have diversity. And at the same time, Jones said, White's promotion ensures that diversity now exists at every level of the police department. Despite that, the defendants made no showing of a compelling reason to use race as a consideration in this promotion. Yes?
I think you need to get to the ground on which you lost, which was the district court's conclusion that even had race not been used, your client would not have been promoted. That is, that race did not cause any injury to your client.
Okay.
That's the ground on which you lost, and I think you need to tackle it.
Well, Your Honor, I'm willing to do that. I have two answers to that. Number one, we also lost on the denial of our summary judgment on our equal protection claim because they had the burden of showing a compelling need. There's a higher standard for a constitutional violation. They did not make that showing whatsoever. Going to the question, and that's really a Title VII, not an equal protection question.
No, it's an equal protection question, too. You can't win under Title VII, 1983, you name it, without showing injury. And that's the district court's conclusion, that no matter what had happened, if somebody was going to be promoted other than the one who actually got the promotion, it would have been Murray. And therefore, your client was not injured. That's the whole he needs to deal with.
Okay. Your Honor, that was an affirmative defense.
It is nonetheless the holding. You should deal with it.
I am trying to, Your Honor. That was, as I said, the fact that someone else would have been selected absent discrimination is an affirmative defense. Defendants waived it. They never pled it. They didn't introduce any evidence that someone else would have been selected.
When you say they waived it, do you mean they affirmatively disclaimed reliance on the argument that Murray would have been the one to receive the promotion?
Well, essentially, in their summary judgment motion and in the evidence they introduced, and I'm also saying they waived it because 8C required them to plead it at some point, and even if they didn't plead it, they couldn't, like, just wait and thereby prejudice the plaintiffs, which is what they did.
Do you know what waiver means?
I think so.
Intentional relinquishment of a known right. Failing to raise something in the pleadings might or might not be a forfeiture, but it's not a waiver. And in any event, Rule 56 says that at the summary judgment stage, the pleadings are irrelevant. You have to go on the summary judgment motion and the summary judgment record, not on what the pleadings say. So we really need to address what happened at the summary judgment stage.
Well, at the summary judgment stage, they didn't raise this ground either until their reply brief after plaintiffs had responded. And even then, they didn't adduce evidence. Right up until the very end, they were saying that Murray would not have been promoted. And the first time that they talked about Jones' opinion of Murray's qualification was this consent decree that was entered over a year later in Murray's case.
The district judge found that there were questions of fact with respect to whether Murray would have been promoted. Is that right? Otherwise, summary judgment would have been granted for Murray, right? He moved for summary judgment as well.
That's correct. Well, I believe that the district court confused the burden on summary judgment because the district court said that all issues of all factual disputes were needed to be resolved on summary judgment.
You don't think the district judge got it right with respect to denying summary judgment in Murray's case?
No, I do not.
So that Murray should have received summary judgment.
Well, it was a joint motion by Murray and Garofalo, and there was on the equal protection claim, and there wasn't.
Well, how would they both get summary judgment? There's only one spot. You didn't challenge the other spot, the other definition spot. You just challenged the one spot, Whites.
It was a question for the jury as to what what their relative chances of getting it were. And the court made that decision. The court selected Murray,
It was a so question to speak. For the jury if there was a material dispute. Now, there's apparently some evidence in the record saying that people had told Murray that he was next in line. It hadn't gone to the person who actually received it. It would have gone to Murray. Is there any evidence contradicting that evidence?
Yes.
In some way.
Well, there's Jones' evidence saying that he didn't trust Murray and that he also relied on Chief Peter Fee's opinion and had asked him about it, and Fee said he didn't trust Murray either. That's some of the evidence in the record, and Jones pointed to specifics. So, I see that my my time for the primary argument is up. I'm going to, unless the court has an additional question right now, I am going to reserve the rest of the time for my co-counsel for rebuttal.
All right. Certainly, Ms. Rimmer.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Waller.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. As we pointed out in our brief, the central issue here is the failure of the plaintiffs to adduce evidence that they would have been selected.
Yeah, my main question, though, is the same one Judge Tinder asked. Why didn't Murray get summary judgment in his favor?
Because as to the issue of whether Murray or Malcolm White should have been selected, there was a disputed question of fact as to Gary Jones, the chief's motivations as to selecting Malcolm White versus Patrick Murray. But once you take Malcolm White, the African-American officer, out of the picture, the only evidence there was in the record, and this is evidence that was not only put into the record by us, but by the plaintiffs, the appellees at the summary judgment stage, was that Patrick Murray would have been selected.
Well, I'm curious about that, though, because the other two aren't disqualified from that position, right? They had the 5 years with the Hazelcrest Police Force and some experience, at least one of them, quite a few years as sergeant, the other a couple of years, something like that. They weren't disqualified.
not disqualified. In fact, so, there were other officers beyond those that filed suit that were qualified
right.
because they had 5 years on the department.
Right, they applied. They saw
well, there was no application process. This was purely a discretionary selection by the chief of police to select those two officers who he felt would best be able to serve as his deputy chiefs in carrying out the goals he had for the department.
So if it's purely discretionary, why didn't Piers and Garofalo at least have a chance for the job, but for the selection of White?
Well, they had a chance in the sense that they were eligible, but the evidence was that Chief Jones was considering Mark Piers for the detective sergeant position, which is the one that he ultimately got. He was considering Murray, but for the administrative sergeant position, which is what he got. Although it's undisputed that as between the four of them, the four plaintiffs, Patrick Murray was the one that Gary Jones would have selected. It's evidence that
the
plaintiffs put on as well as
his qualifications appear to be superior to the others, but where is the evidence that Jones would have selected Murray?
The evidence is in the testimony of Gary Jones that was put on by not only us but by the plaintiffs at summary judgment. For serious consideration, the only consideration or considerable candidate was Sergeant Murray, in my mind. And then the plaintiffs, throughout their responses to the statements of material fact put forth by us, as well as in their own assertions of material fact that should be considered, was that same statement that for consideration, Sergeant Murray was the only one who would have been considered. They also put forth evidence that Gensel, Nelson, Murray, and Lenz all testified that Jones told them that he wanted Murray to be his deputy chief of support services. And that's not only in response to our statements of fact at summary judgment. They asserted that same evidence. So what Judge Hart was left with in deciding summary judgment on who would have been selected for this one position was the only evidence that was beyond dispute, was undisputed, because it was put on by both sides, was that Patrick Murray would have been selected. And that's why the court was correct when the court ruled that even if race was considered.
I'm looking at your 56.1 statement in the Murray case, in which you say in paragraph 64 that Murray was the only one who was seriously considered, but that Jones didn't trust him and didn't select him because he didn't feel he had the best interest of the department in mind and so on. A pretty impressive statement of reasons, paragraph 64 through 75, as to why Jones would not have selected Murray. So it seems to me there's some fact question.
Well, and that's as to the reason that Gary Jones selected Malcolm White versus Patrick Murray. And as I indicated, as to that issue, there was a question of fact as to the decision-making process in Jones' mind as to why he didn't select Murray versus Malcolm White. But as between the other three plaintiffs, there was no dispute. He had issues with all of them. Garofalo didn't even indicate a desire or interest in the deputy chief position. He wanted to be detective sergeant, and that's undisputed and admitted to at summary judgment. So yes, as between when you're looking at the selection process and why Gary Jones selected the African-American officer, Malcolm White, versus the four plaintiffs, he did have reasons as to why he chose Malcolm White over each of the plaintiffs. But as between the four plaintiffs themselves, it is undisputed in the record that Jones would have selected Patrick Murray. And so the court was left with a record that was void of any evidence that either Piers or Garofalo had any chance of being selected. There was never a statement in the record from Jones that I was considering Piers and Murray, or I was considering Garofalo and Murray. The only evidence was that if it came down to Murray, Garofalo, Piers, and at one time Nelson, Murray was the clear choice. That's who I was going to select.
Did these recommended considerations fall to the wayside? They weren't even, for example, there were a whole list of not required but recommended qualifications.
Those were desired qualifications that had been put in place by a prior chief and in his general orders. Each chief is free to pick and choose.
The only thing he was bound by was it a 5-year or 3-year or 5-year?
It was the 5-year qualification, because that's what the statute says. And frankly, to the extent that a non-home rule community, to the extent that a non-home rule community passes an ordinance that contradicts state law, it's overridden by state law. They can't do that. So Gary Jones had reasons why he did choose Malcolm White, but again, as between Murray and the other three plaintiffs, there was no dispute. There was no evidence put on by Piers or Garofalo that Gary Jones was really considering me. There wasn't any of that. And I would agree that there might have even been a question of fact if Jones had said it was really a close decision between Patrick Murray and Piers, or a close decision between Piers and Garofalo. But you have to go on what the record was and what the evidence was. And this was not evidence that was put on only by us. It was evidence that was put on by the plaintiffs, too, that as between the four of them, Pat Murray was the clear choice, and so that was the basis for the court's decision, and that's why the court was correct when it said that the plaintiffs, Piers and Garofalo, did not point to any evidence establishing that they would have been selected. They didn't give the court anything to hang its head on to even get to that stage. So the court was really devoid of evidence to say that.
Did they cite these recommended qualifications?
Did who cite, Your Honor?
The losers for the position.
Well, they did. And frankly, one of the recommended qualifications is that you have a degree, and Mark Pierce did not have a degree. So. Nor did Gary Gensel, the one who was selected for the Deputy Chief of Patrol position.
Nor did White.
Nor did White, exactly. So Gary Jones didn't go by the desired qualifications.
Right.
He was looking, as he testified, to try and figure out who was best going to be able to serve.
But isn't part of the attitude of the losers is that we met these recommended qualifications, but they didn't make any difference.
Well, they didn't meet all of the recommended qualifications.
No, some of them.
They met.
Which
some
one
of them.
Did Garofalo not meet?
Garofalo, I believe, met each of the desired qualifications.
All of them. Every single one.
As did Murray. Garofalo, again, it's undisputed. He did not even put in. Asked to be considered for the position of deputy chief. This is in response to our statement of facts, statement 90. Plaintiffs admitted that. This wasn't a situation where Sergeant Garofalo had expressed any desire or that Chief Jones was even considering for selection. It was really Patrick Murray had Malcolm White not been selected. Just briefly, I, as to the constructive discharge claim, without the plaintiffs getting to liability, I don't believe that they can get to the constructive discharge claim in any event, but there was still a failure of proof. To any degree, to establish a constructive discharge, the burden is higher even than that of a hostile work environment claim, and they had absolutely no evidence to support a constructive discharge claim.
I'm curious about how you would respond to your opponent's argument on waiver on the mixed motive defense.
Yeah, this really wasn't a case where there was a waiver. It was really a failure of proof. The plaintiffs failed to prove that they had a chance to be selected. So, as in the Alexander versus Milwaukee case.
Where do you first raise in the case that race was a factor, but he would, White would have received this anyway?
Well, it was certainly testified to in Gary Jones' deposition, and that was clear. I mean, it was clear that issue was framed from the time I filed the motion to disqualify Ms. Rumor from representing all of the plaintiffs. The court addressed that issue and said, to the extent that one plaintiff proves that the
So was it clear from your response to the plaintiff's motion for summary judgment, as well as from your motion for summary judgment and the brief you submitted in support of it?
I think it was clear from the inception of the case, the way that the court framed.
So, when I go back to those briefs, I'll see it articulated in your opening briefs on both of those motions.
I can't say that because it wasn't framed in that fashion by either side. It had always been a case where there was no evidence to establish that, if you take Malcolm White aside, there was no evidence to establish that Pierce or Garofalo would have been selected. And maybe it's two sides of the same coin, whether it was an affirmative defense or whether it was a failure in proof. If you construe that there was an affirmative defense required, the court has discretion under Rule 15A to allow the assertion of an affirmative defense at any stage prior to trial. And certainly the plaintiffs can't claim prejudice here, where that issue had been identified by the court from the very first substantive motion. The very first substantive ruling made by the court was, to the extent that one plaintiff proves that he would be selected for the position, he provides a defense to the other plaintiffs. And so the way the court framed it was, if one plaintiff establishes that he would have been selected, that plaintiff provides the defense in the case. And that's really how it was viewed by us throughout the summary judgment stage, that Gary Jones, the chief, had his reasons for selecting Malcolm White, but as between the four named plaintiffs, there really wasn't any dispute, there wasn't any question but that Patrick Murray would have been his choice. And that's what the court decided the case on. The court referenced its decision on the motion to disqualify in its ruling on summary judgment, and it was an issue that had been present from the beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Wiley.
Thank you.
Mr. Tancredi.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Nicola Tancredi, counsel for the appellant Mark Pierce, Your Honors and counsel. Your Honors, in the short time that I have left, I would like to completely rebut Appellee's arguments by making several quick points and then addressing them in perhaps more detail based on counsel's comments. First, Your Honor, there are only a few points to really keep in mind to guide towards the proper disposition of this matter. First, as this Court clearly articulated in Alexander, the real loss here is not of an individual position, but of the ability and the opportunity, rather, to be fairly evaluated. And that is what was denied here. The second point, Your Honor, is that if the records...
I don't
show.
I don't see where that gets us. That's enough for standing, we know from the Supreme Court. But is there a material dispute of fact about whether Murray would have been promoted, whether Murray was first in line after White? That's the causation question.
And Your Honor, that was exactly my next comment. If the record establishes anything, Your Honors, it establishes that Murray was never a realistic candidate for the position, for the simple reason that the uncontroverted evidence of record is that Murray was untrustworthy. Murray didn't have the trust and confidence of Chief Fee and of the predecessor. And even Jones said he was influenced by his comments with the previous chiefs. There is no evidence of the record that anybody trusted Murray. The evidence is of record that on paper his scores may have been superior, but as Your Honors know, you can have the best bar exam score in the world, and if you can't pass character and fitness, you are not admitted before this or any other court. The simple truth is, in particular,
why defendants throw in the towel and pay Murray? There was a consent judgment in this case, or in his case.
I can't account for that, Your Honor. I can't account for that. I can tell you, Your Honor, again, the police being a paramilitary organization, like any government office with extreme responsibility, if you don't have the trust and confidence of your superiors or the selecting official, you will not be appointed. And very simply put, there's absolutely no evidence of record that anybody trusted Murray. The evidence is compelling that Jones himself was the victim of the pervasive and pernicious racism that was evident here, that his judgment was totally overwhelmed. So any of his comments about, you know, Murray just weren't there. I would note that the evidence is also clear that both appellant Garofalo and Pierce were strongly competitive. I would note, Your Honors, that that evidence is in the record at several points. Judge at the trial court noted in his footnote 11 that both appellants obtained positions in other police departments. As we specified, now he noted that in contrary.
Thank you, counsel.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm so sorry. The case is taken under advisement.